Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Steve Marks.
And I'm Wade Wecker.
And who's this guy? He was just in the building, yep. And we thought we'd have
just
him on.
Pulled him in, have a conversation.
A man who needs no introduction, which means we don't actually have to introduce him, right? Yeah,
that's true. We should introduce him.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Clearly, I did not get the shirt color warning memo.
This morning, I saw this shirt in my car and thought, I've got to put this on. Yeah, well, this is an extra special episode because we've got Scott the Goo on the show to talk about Windows Azure-y stuff and what he's been doing. Before we do that, we're going to force everybody to sit through the news and wait patiently for Scott. And then Scott even has a demo.
Awesome.
So that's going to be good. And, of course, we'll wrap up with our tip of the week as usual. But before all that jazz, the news.
All right. So... First thing to talk about is earlier this week, actually 2 days ago, we released an update to the iOS library for Windows Azure. So we've talked about the Windows Azure toolkits for devices in the past, and in May we released the first drop of the iOS toolkit. So essentially what it is it's an Objective-C library with samples and Xcode that makes it really easy to start leveraging resources in Windows Azure. And one of the key items related to the toolkit is that it leverages the same set of services that the Windows Phone 7 and the upcoming Android toolkit also use. So it really makes it easier for an iOS developer to start using Windows Azure. And we added a few things this time which are worth, I think, just pointing out. The first is we provided support, native support in the library for the access control service, which is really awesome. So right from your iPhone, iPad application, when you open it up, you can be presented with that Home Realm discovery page, choose the identity provider you want your user to leverage within the application, and off they go. And one of the things we want to do is make it really simple for the developer to leverage access control. And so we released a couple of additional things. First is the Cloud Ready Package for Devices. We've introduced this in the past, but basically it's a pre-compiled CSPKG file that has all the services and resources already built into it. And what we've done is we've exposed some of the metadata used to configure Windows Identity Foundation for Access Control Service through the CSCFG file, so the config file. So as a developer, I just have to modify that config file and deploy the CSPKG. And so if I'm running on Mac OS, I'm not encumbered.
As long as I can edit a text file
exactly,
and go
to
the settings, I don't need an SDK.
And if you don't want to actually modify that XML yourself, what we also did is built a Mac application that will walk you through a wizard where you can present the access control service namespace, the key, all this information, and then the output is the CSCFG file. So again, trying to reduce the barrier of entry for the iOS developer. And then lastly, of course, is the support for ACS. Very, very simple, kind of somewhat elegant API, and makes it really easy for you to leverage the access control service. So check it out. It's up on GitHub in the repository. So they got the samples, the docs, and the library. So you can take a look at that.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Next news item, App Fabric July release.
Yes. Yeah, this was actually in response to our Cloud Cover show.
Last week.
We showed how awesome it was that you could right-click on stuff in the portal.
And everybody who did App Fabric,
didn't have right-click yet, but the tremendous response
from
the show
Cloud Cover fans,
how much everybody loved right-click. Now you can do it on all of your App Fabric stuff, too.
Well, and it's not just the right-click support, but they added localization.
No, but that's the most important
thing. Okay.
Yeah, there are some other, like being able to read the text in your native language. Or
co-admin support. So the Windows Azure portal had co-admin support. Now App Fabric portal does as well. I don't believe the SQL Azure side of things does yet, but it is nice to see this come to the access control service as well.
This is good stuff for us to talk about with Scott when we get to Scott about sort of unification of all the portal stuff.
I hope we'll talk more about it coming up soon. So
we will get to that.
Great. Mango. Okay, so Steve was a little curious as to why I would want to include an announcement about Mango being released to manufacturing. And one of the reasons is, we've been looking and talking
a
lot about
Mango first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Actually,
by
tell
that's
people.
Good point. So Mango is the next release of the Windows Phone OS. So it's the code name. I don't know what the final product is going to be called, but Mango is the code name for it. There's a couple of things interesting about this new release and some of the new things built into Mango that I think will resonate and be important for a Windows Azure developer. We've talked a lot about the need to place your key for things like Windows Azure Storage in your services so that you don't bleed that key down to the device and potentially expose yourself to a user, you know, maliciously, you know, stealing your key and gaining access to storage. And one of the things that Mango includes is DPAPI support on the device. And actually, Vittorio Bertacci had a nice post about exactly some of the differences between DPAPI in, you know, full-blown .NET versus its support on the phone. And I think it'll be interesting looking at Mango and some of these new features to see how it makes things easier or how we can start doing things differently when connecting to services running in Windows Azure. So I just wanted to mention this because I think it's something, you know, worth noting and being aware of. Yep. So,
and it's coming to everybody's devices in the fall, I think, is David Wright.
So, yeah. So, and you can get the Windows Phone Developer Tools 7.1 Beta 2 right now, so you can start actually building out some Mango apps. I think we have one last news item. Light switch.
Light switch. I don't know anything about light switch. Light switch shipped.
It did, yeah.
2.0, right? It's the...
Yeah.
1.0.
So,
I lied. That's how little I know about it.
One of the things that I wanted to call out, and we talked about this before, is the ability to publish straight to Windows Azure.
Yep.
Now, I don't think either one of us have actually tried this
yet.
We keep talking about, we want to bring this to the show and go through it, but... I think it's neat that, you know, this is released, and the fact that you can deploy to Windows Azure. And it looks like, too, it's not just deploying the apps, but then it says here as well you can distribute your apps from Windows Azure. So desktop applications distributed via Windows Azure. So it's pretty interesting.
This sounds good.
We're
going to have to do it. We're going to have to do it on the show. So that now we've been shamed it. Now that we've had to, like,
talk
about the release and we still haven't actually tried it, we got to do it.
Yeah.
We will.
All right. So I think that's the news.
Yeah, enough of that crap. We got Scott here, and I think the best thing to start off with is just like, what's your job now? Like, what are you doing with the cloud? And I don't know, what have you been doing so far? Like, what's been your experience learning about everything we've got? I've got a billion questions.
Sure.
So start with any of them.
what is my job? That's a good question. I ask myself that same question every day. But basically, I kind of joined the Azure project earlier this summer. So I'm still relatively new. But I kind of help run a lot of the, or kind of run the kind of developer side of Azure a little bit. So a lot of the core application platform pieces, things like our web roles, or some of our middle tier capabilities like Service Bus and caching, mm-hmm. As well as a lot of the .NET pieces, obviously. So ASP.NET, WCF, AppFabric, and BizTalk, and some of our other kind of server pieces. And then also some of the Visual Studio developer side, and then also also responsible now for the Azure admin portal and kind of the overall sign-up billing and website process.
Awesome.
So kind of a wide spectrum of stuff.
I'd say that's a lot.
So that's it? Like, I mean, nothing else? There's no...
It's keeping me busy at the moment, yeah. But it's been a lot of fun. So
yeah. Yeah. So I mean, what have you been spending your time on so far? Like, what's the... I think people would just love to know, you know, like, what did you do last week? Or, you know, what was the... Like, what have you been really focusing on, or the challenge you see is sort of the most immediate, or things like that.
And I think it'll be interesting, too, the fact that you're new to a lot of this stuff as well, right?
Right.
So it's quite a bit of, I'm sure it's been a very rapid,
right?
Rapid ramp up, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you look at Azure today, it's kind of, it's grown from several teams, mm-hmm. and sometimes you can see that in the product, but, you know, it's kind of come a long way in a short period of time, mm-hmm. and there's lots of different groups and lots of teams contributing, and so, you know, a lot of what I'm doing is A, getting educated, and then B, also, how do I connect all the different groups? Because we have been kind of federated a little bit in the past. Yeah. And, you know, the thing I often focus a lot on is kind of end-to-end experience. And so I'm someone who likes to know, like, hey, what are the exact lines of code you write, and why do they look like that? And, you know, hey, should they look like this? And, you know, how many steps are involved, and how much friction is involved? And so you know, I spent a lot of time in the early days just coming up to speed and also kind of helping drive people to think about those types of things. So one of the things I did in the first couple of weeks was say, hey, let's do an offsite, get kind of all the top senior leaders on Azure together. We had about 60 people, and rented a giant hotel ballroom, set up 10 or 11 tables, and said, let's spend a whole day writing code. And it was kind of cool, because, you know, in your day-to-day job, sometimes you don't get a chance to step back and and play with the product end-to-end, not just in your area. And so we split up everyone across different teams, so, you know, no one was quite working on their product, they were working on others.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I said, it's the full experience. We went to Safeway, we bought little $25 credit cards, gave them out to each team, and said, you got to sign up, you got to register for billing, you got to download the SDK, and you got to build one of these five apps.
Nice.
And just document the experience, you know, good, bad, ugly. And, you know, I think that was, you know, the good news is by the end of the day, people built some pretty cool stuff. But everyone was kind of like, wow, you know, the getting started experience is not as easy as I thought it was.
Yeah.
And wow, you know, the sample, you know, where are the samples? Where's, you know, how do we get this? And so it was good. You know, I think we kind of left and everyone went, oh, okay, there's a bunch of stuff we can make a little bit better.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've kind of transitioned now in terms of, you know, now that we've got everyone educated, just try to figure out, okay, how do we prioritize, you know, how we bring some things that are a little bit less unified together than we'd like. So we have a couple different admin experiences you were talking about.
Yep.
You know,
right.
This admin tool is that feature, and this admin tool is that feature, and hey, wouldn't it be great if both admin tools had the same features?
Yep.
You know, around the SDK, the admin tool, kind of that getting started experience, and then, you know, how do we kind of... you know, bring those pieces together a little bit and kind of have the best practices everywhere.
Yeah.
And then lastly, kind of focusing a lot on, you know, and what's the next level of capabilities? So we want to make it really easy, really frictionless to get started, but how do we also kind of raise the bar in terms of what you can do?
Yeah.
And so also looking at kind of more of the high end, you know, what are those differentiated scenarios that are really going to make developers and make people that want to use Azure go like, wow, I got to use Azure because it has this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm spending a lot of my time on, and you know, hopefully over the next couple of months, you'll start to see some of that work show up in some pretty neat ways. I'm pretty bullish in terms of some of the plans that were in place well before I joined, and then and some of the things that we've kind of put in motion this summer.
It's been neat from an internal perspective to see kind of your influence start creeping around and, you know, getting people excited and thinking about, you know, just as you said, bringing things together and making it more cohesive. That's been a really neat byproduct, I think, having you come over, more so than I've seen over the last two or three years. So that's been pretty exciting.
I thought having everybody actually sign up and do, like, I was thinking about it because I'm currently running, like, I don't know, 30-some applications. And like, I'm always writing Windows Azure applications and running them in the cloud and maintaining them and whatever. So, like, I know all that part of the story pretty well. And it occurred to me that, like, when my account was created, we didn't have a sign-up process.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, this was back when there was some spreadsheet with, like, little GUIDs, and you had to, you know, go enter the data in some table, and then your account existed. And so it's actually, it's been interesting... I've been ramping a few people up recently on sort of how to get started and whatever. And there's a bunch that I don't even know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so that's actually having everybody go through that, a lot of people presumably had the same experience as me where they hadn't actually touched that part of it. Or obviously some people work on that every day, so they do, but, you know, but not everybody has sort of the breadth of, you know, seeing it all the way across.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so, you know, cool. I like kind of seeing that kind of end-to-end experience and sort of saying, show me every screenshot, how long does it take, why do we have this text, you know, how do we kind of remove stuff, make it as simple as possible. And, you know, that's true not just for sign-up, but even for dev tasks, you know, like, why do we have to do a config thing here and a piece of code there, or, you know, why can't I manage my configuration between test and development automated instead of having to, you know, you know, how do we just kind of simplify, remove stuff in terms of what people have to do to get common things done? And at the same time, you know, look at how do we go beyond, you know, it's not just about productivity, it's also about capability.
Yeah.
And what are that next set of features that people really need and really want? And that's fun. You know, it's such a dynamic space that there's no limit to the number of features we can add. And, you know, I think, you know, you're going to hopefully see us kind of crank up the velocity in terms of getting some of those things out there pretty soon.
So as you've been digging in, I'm just curious, like, from a product, feature, technology, whatever perspective, what's excited you most about Windows Azure and the platform in terms of either capability or, I don't know, technology? I mean, is there anything that stood out you've just gotten really excited about? Or?
Well, I think the biggest thing that excites me is the potential.
Okay.
You know, it's I think when we're, you know, both the platform today, but I think especially over the next, you know, few years, you know, one of the things I keep kind of pushing on my team is, you know, there's a bunch of stuff we are going to focus on around productivity and making existing scenarios easier. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the really interesting things is as storage costs go to zero, you know, and they won't be exactly zero, but they're approaching zero.
Yep.
You know, as bandwidth also goes to zero or approaches zero, and as, you know, compute becomes unlimited, the really interesting thing is what are the scenarios that you just fundamentally would never even consider building mm-hmm. today mm-hmm. that you can start building in the future? You know, when you can access, store terabytes or petabytes of, you know, structured or unstructured data in a cost-effective way, and you can get access to it a year or two later and get insights from it. And if it's cheap enough to store and it's easy enough to actually query and crawl, you know, you can start to do things that your company would never consider doing.
Yep.
And likewise, you know, if you can do burst and you can actually do high-performance computing overnight on certain things, or if you can spin up 1,000 web servers and scale out to the, you know, the next giant app on the internet, you know, it's an exciting time for developers.
Yep.
And I think that potential, and if we can make it really easy, really approachable, and then open up all these new things that you just can't do today, I think that's a pretty killer combination that's pretty exciting to talk about. So that's, for me, the biggest thing I'm yep. excited about overall.
That's cool.
And then there's tons of cool features coming out that I'm also really excited about.
Yep. Tell us some of them. Tell us some of them.
So what's going to ship when? Let's,
Well, you know, we're working on, you know, we're working on...
No, we want specific features and dates. I don't. None of this. I can hear you winding up for no, but we want to know what's. Let's disclose something on. All right. No, we won't. We won't push you there.
I think there's something coming next week, but I won't commit on that just yet because it's.
That's good. Next week we can just pick anything that happened and go. That was the thing.
It. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, this
blog post by this guy.
Well, I think one thing, the feature that I'm kind of excited about that's going to be shipping later this year is the Service Bus. We've had Service Bus for a while.
Yep.
And so V1 of Service Bus is already in general availability.
Yep.
You know, Service Bus today allows you to kind of bridge between organizations, and it's really useful if, for example, from within the cloud, you want to call back to a service that's running inside your firewall within your organization.
Yep.
And it lets you call it in a synchronous way using WCF. And there's a bunch of really interesting scenarios, both for your mid-tier apps calling back, but also folks like EasyJet have a really nice model where at their airports, they basically call into Azure and then tunnel back to their existing data center.
Yep.
So it really enables a unique capability that not really any other cloud provider today offers. What we're doing in V2 of Service Bus, which will ship later this year, is adding, in addition to the synchronous support that's already there, async support. So you can actually use messaging and you know, write to queues. You can also take advantage of pub/sub kind of capabilities.
Yep.
So you, in that parlance, you write to a topic, and then you can have any number of listeners to the topic mm-hmm. and that subscribe to it and process it. And so it's kind of a messaging-based architecture.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, the nice thing about that is it can allows you to do a couple different scenarios. One is it can make your system much more durable or much more reliable, because you have kind of this durable messaging capability.
Mm-hmm.
And so your front-end web server, when it takes an order, can stick it in a queue and then say, hey, your order's being processed, and then have a worker dequeue it, process the order at a later point. And if the worker crashes or you're updating your database or your shipping department's down, your app is still able to take orders.
Yeah.
The other thing that's nice about it is from a load capacity perspective, I think it fits well in the cloud because you can actually have a front-end. You can have, like, say, three web servers or three web roles, and you could have one worker in the back end processing it, and you don't actually have to have one-to-one kind of mapping.
Yep. Right.
And if you decide, hey, wow, we're taking more orders than we expected, or processing order is slowing down, just increase the number of workers to, say, two or three or four or five or 10, And you can kind of scale up or down there. So it's a really nice kind of tool in your tool chest for doing kind of elastic computing.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that's interesting about it is, you know, just in general, the ability to kind of, again, span organizations so that you can say, oh, you know, I'm going to have my front end running inside Windows Azure, and so I'm taking orders there, but my back end shipping department's actually in my existing data center, or it's a partner in a different continent. If it's a European order, say, I might be in the U.S. data center, but my shipper in Europe is based in the U.K., and the ability to kind of put something into a queue, have another listener somewhere else in the world dequeue it and process it, even outside the Azure environment, is really powerful in terms of just coordinating kind of overall work and things like that. And so I'm pretty excited by it. The nice thing about the way Service Bus works is you'll just be able to go in the admin tool and say, I'd like a new Service Bus namespace, give it a name. You know, 10 seconds, 30 seconds later, you're done.
Yep.
And then you can effectively create queues, you can create topics, and you can read and write messages to and from them.
Yeah.
And so it's you don't need to install anything, you don't need to spin up any roles. And the pricing model will be based on usage. So if you don't use it or you only have a few messages a month, you know, it won't cost anything. And we haven't announced the final pricing, but it's, you know, going to be pretty cost effective, and it'll be kind of on a per message, per bandwidth basis. And so it's easy to set up. It doesn't take much lines of code to write to. And it's we expose it both with a REST-based protocol, so you can call it from any language. And so obviously we'll have .NET wrappers, but we'll also be able to support Java and, you know, I think you're going to show a C++ sample a little bit later. And then we're also integrating with existing messaging protocols, like AMQP, which is an open protocol. And so if you want to use, say, RabbitMQ from a Linux box, you could read and write messages through Service Bus to a .NET listener. And so it's there's nice interop possibilities, and you know, it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. We've talked about it quite a bit. I'm particularly excited about the messaging capabilities of Service Bus. I mean, just the topic and having, I think it's like the SQL 92 syntax or something where you can do a call into and basically subscribe to a particular message type and receive that back is awesome. So it'll be a neat capability. The other, we've talked about this as well with the Windows Azure queues today. You don't have the ability to attach like metadata to the message, right, that you put in the queue, whereas you have like a dictionary attached to the Service Bus queues where you can attach all kinds of additional properties and metadata. So some neat stuff. There's been a lot of excitement about it.
Yeah, and we support the ability to do kind of a low-level messaging API. And then also, even for the async version that's coming out, we're also going to support a WCF channel binding. And that means that you can, if you want to just program to the WCF service-based model, you can. Mm. And you just go in your config file and say, I want to use Service Bus. And then effectively you're firing off what looks like calling a service contract. You're not really programming to a message. You're doing marshalling and all that stuff like you do with WCF. But it's just using the Service Bus under the covers in order to deliver it. So it's nice in that you can write to, if you're coming from a messaging background and you like to create a message, send a message, we support that API. And then if you just want to use all the WCF capabilities and programming model that you already know, hey, you can use that too.
It's very cool. Very cool.
I don't buy any of this unless I see it actually working. So, is there stuff you can actually show us? We want the proof.
You want the proof.
That you really are the kind of guy who wants to see every line of code.
Okay.
And
sure. Well, let's go to a demo. So this is a simple Service Bus demo. And what I've done is I've basically built a web role instance, and it is deployed in the San Antonio data center. It's simple ASP.NET and MVC app, and basically click to send a message. There's a little form. I could say, you know, hi there, thanks for having me on the show, and hit send. And I'm just doing a form post to the web app in San Antonio. On the app side, basically, it's going to create a message, send it to a queue inside the Service Bus.
Yep.
And basically, the code to do this is pretty darn simple. Looks like this. So it's basically, here's my ASP.NET MVC app. I then got a cloud project here with just a front-end web role. Basically, when you use /orders, it displays a form. And so the form here looks like... So it's just a simple HTML form with a text area and a submit button. And basically, when you hit submit, it's going to go to this post method right here called send message. And all I do is I take the message that I typed in and I hit, you know, as an argument. And this basically creates a, what's called a mesh sender object, which is how you program the service bus with the current CTP. Mm-hmm. And then you basically create a message. I can set a label on it. I can set some properties. I give a sort of a property bag of stuff. And then I just say send.
Yep.
And then, you know, this particular helper method here is just got a little bit of wire up code to talk to the service bus.
Yep.
You'll see in the next preview, we're shrinking that down a little bit. But in general, even today, it's only a couple lines of code to do. And then on the listener side, you know, what's kind of nice is, so I'm writing messages on my web app here. So I can say another and another one. I can write any numbers that I want. I don't have a listener wired up right now to this queue, but it's basically being durably stored in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
So even if my web role disappears, my messages aren't going to get lost. But then I can basically wire up either a worker role, or in this case here, I'm just going to run a command line console app on my local laptop.
Yep.
That it's going to connect. So this is connecting to the service bus in Azure, but it's going to run as a local, you know, command line console.net app.
And all of us service bus fans love the console apps. So
yeah, exactly. Well, the nice thing is, you know, this is one of those classic, you know, have your app running in the cloud,
yep,
but connected to some backend stuff,
yep,
that's inside your organization.
Yep.
And so I'm just doing a while loop, and I basically just receive the message and then spit it out, and then when I'm done, I mark it as completed. And so if I run it now, you can basically see I'm connecting to the service bus. There are my two messages.
Yep.
And if I go back here, so this is running on my laptop, this is running in the cloud, and here we go again. And if I scroll down and hit send, there it is.
That's great.
So it's a pretty easy way you can connect up your on-premise things running inside the firewall with the cloud. Do it all durably, so if the internet goes down, your app and your customer experience doesn't go down with it. As you see, it's just a couple lines of code.
Yep.
So pretty easy to set up, pretty powerful capability.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is neat is in the samples for the CTP, there's a bunch of different examples, and one of them actually is a Windows Phone application. And what's nice is moving towards queues as a way of interconnecting through Service mm-hmm. Bus just opens up and makes so many things easier. Like, I remember with the connectivity pieces, since you're doing net TCP and you've got all these bindings and realize it made it, well, first of all, more complicated, but in many cases impossible to get certain types of devices to interact across the Service Bus. And, you know, this is very cool. So
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Neat.
See, he did know every line of code. We doubted him, but he did actually know all the lines.
Let's be clear, I did not doubt him, and never voiced that.
I'll own up. I doubted him, but he came through, delivered as promised.
Cool.
Okay, I feel like it's that time of the show.
Yeah, that wonderful time.
The terrifying and yet exhilarating time of the show where we have to pause for a moment and have no idea what Bob did until we watch the show later.
Yeah.
And let Bob sort of introduce our tip of the week for us.
Yep.
And I think we got to go with like a red shirt theme. Perhaps a theme.
Maybe
of
with
how
the brown.
Wade doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we'll let Bob do the dirty work on this one and come up with what he will. So Bob, have fun. And all of you at home, have fun. And we will too when we see it. But here it is, your tip of the week.
Well, I woke up in the morning, saw that red shirt.
Uh-oh, not the red shirt.
Yeah, I woke up in the morning, saw that red shirt.
Uh-oh, not the red shirt.
I knew something bad gonna happen. I just pray don't let it hurt.
Oh, no, don't let it hurt.
I pray.
Oh, no.
And we're back. All right, so for the tip of the week this week, I wanted to keep in line with the service bus queue topic theme and point out that, as Scott mentioned, it's not just net TCP, et cetera. Since it's over HTTP, any client, any technology that can talk HTTP can theoretically interact with service bus queues.
Right, and when you think programming languages that are designed for REST APIs... and HTTP.
First thing I think of is...
It's definitely C++,
yep,
right?
Yep,
I mean,
yeah,
I can't
C++.
Think of anything that's more suited to using this kind of an API than C++. So that's,
but hey, if you can do it in C++, you know...
It's sort of one of those like, yeah, if you can do this in C++, I'm sure you can in Perl and Python
Ruby
and Ruby and all these languages that have, you know, nice HTTP wrappers. But C++. So it's going to start with like open a socket, right? This.
Well, I'm gonna let people peruse this themselves.
HTTP 1.1.
We won't go through the details here too much here. But essentially, Michael Washam has put together a proof of concept. Essentially, since he doesn't have the .NET libraries for it, you're going to see a lot more code because he's essentially having to manage a lot of the things that the library does for us. But I mean, here he's got a full-out example of a native C++ application using queues. And what's interesting is, you know, this is a C++ one. I've seen a lot of other community members. What's the our MVP's name? Connective. Goodness, he's in Ireland. I'm forgetting his name right now. At
Neil?
Any rate, Neil, thank you.
Neil McKenzie?
Yes, Neil McKenzie, thank you. Neil's written a whole bunch of proof of concepts around queues as well, and just being able to demonstrate that this is open and easy to consume, or relatively easy based on the language,
yeah,
maybe
I mean,
a little
if
more
you
difficult.
Choose to do it in C++. Although, you know, this isn't a totally made up, like, I'm sort of mocking using C++ for this, because it's just, as a language to do it, it's sort of weird, except that there's lots of code that people have that is C++
yes.
that mm-hmm. might be an endpoint yeah. on one side or the other. Now, you can always put your own sort of wrapper that turns it into just, you
yes.
know, lines of text into STDN or something. There are other ways where I might structure it if I had a C++ component that needed to mm-hmm. do this. But, you know, once the code's been written once to do it from C++, using that is actually, I wouldn't be surprised if people end up actually
yeah.
doing this. So.
Well, if you think about the use case here, rather than a console application on premises, I may have a legacy C++ application running in my data center on
right.
desktops
right.
in my company. So it's good
cool.
to take a look at. It's neat to see that, you know, someone has actually kind of moved forward and given this a try.
And it's a good,
C++.
I always find pieces of code like this good if you just want to understand what the protocol is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then if you've seen one that's very explicit, like creating yes. a new HTTP request line by line,
yes.
you see exactly what's there. It's better than reading the documentation. Like
yep.
you can actually just like see exactly what it takes to construct it. And
yeah.
so just like all the weird storage client libraries
yeah.
I do, it's sort of easy once you've seen someone just yep. sort of step by step through
yep.
it. So,
yeah.
so worth reading even if you're not going to use C++.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
Great.
Cool.
Well, that was good. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much, Scott.
No, my pleasure being
here. This was a blast. I'm sure a lot of people are going to enjoy hearing straight from you, sort of what your thoughts mm-hmm. have been on the cloud. So that was really. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for sharing some code.
It'll be neat in like 6 months, you know, further, having you come back and talking about some.
Well, we're
going
to have him next
code.
Week to see whatever
week?
He said was going to happen next. Yeah,
there
we've
got
to hold him accountable. I mean, we can't just let that slide. No, maybe we'll wait a little bit. We'll give him a breather. But yeah, we'll definitely have to touch base again.
That'd be great.
So. As always, if you've got stuff you want to say to us, you can tweet us at Cloud Cover Show. Everybody knows at Scott Goo will also work if you want to talk to Scott about anything he said, whatever.
Yep.
Give us ideas for what you want to see on the show, and until next time, thanks a lot.
Thanks.